Hello, everyone. This is Matt Stevens in Abu Dhabi. We're talking tonight with Aiden Ye from Taiwan. And she has been a web head since 2002. She was one of the original, actually maybe even in 2001. And she's been a very good friend and colleague in all that time. And David Wexler says in the text chat, she's a great web head. She certainly is. And she's going to relax us, I think, tonight, because I'm going to be very relaxed. I'm looking forward to sitting back and listening to her presentation. I always say this is the 16th of March, 2014. I always like to put that information in for people listening to the recording. This is being recorded. It will become an MP3 as well as a recorded Blackboard Communicate Illuminate session. So anyhow, we're very happy to have Aiden here. Hi, Aiden. How are you?
Hi, Vance, and hi, everybody. Thank you for the invitation. It's a privilege, I think, to be able to share my work with you. Before I start my presentation, I don't really want to call this presentation. It's not really. It's more like sharing what I presented in Shanghai a few months ago. But before I start, I'd like to give the microphone to everybody here to say hi. I know many of you, except I think for Halima, she's still here. Say so, it will be part of the recording. Say who you are and where you're from, where you're teaching. Okay.
Okay. I can open up all the mics. I can start it that way. What sometimes happens when I do that is that we start getting echo, and then I'll have to turn them all off. So as long as everyone is wearing an earphone and is mutes their mic when they're not talking. I have three mics open right now, and I'll go ahead and open them up. Let's court disaster. I don't mind. And if something happens, well, we'll just set it back to just a few mics. So, sure, okay, at Aiden's invitation, please open your microphone and introduce yourself. We'd like to hear from you.
Hi, I'm David Wexler. I'm not really a webhead, but I like everyone here, and I'm in New Jersey, close to New York City. Thanks.
Thanks, David. I thought you're a webhead. I mean, I think I've known you for many, many years now.
He is a webhead. David, you are hereby a webhead. Stop telling people you're not a webhead. I meant that in a friendly way, of course. David has come out and collected webheads from airports. He's turned up in conferences in Philadelphia, for example. So he's hung around with us. He's just like any other webhead. He's been with us a very long time. Also, since the early days, I think. We met him in Tapton. We used to hang out in Tapton a lot. Okay, so anyway, anybody else would like to introduce themselves? Okay, well, maybe not, or feel free to. If you want to say something, you can take the mic and introduce yourself then. And if you land at an airport in the United States and you need a ride, just let Dave know. He's got very good airport service.
Well, okay then. I think we can start. I'll continue with my presentation. All right. So, what I'll be sharing with you is like what I said earlier, a presentation I did in Shanghai in October last year, and it is about teaching the art of poetic discourse. And I think for anyone here who has taught poetry, you could raise your hand if you are teaching or you've taught poetry before.
Taught poetry. I thought you said write poetry. Or
taught
everyone
poetry.
Dabbled in poetry.
Poetry. Okay.
I don't know. Not overtly, but probably.
Write poetry, write poetry. Yeah, listen to poetry, okay. Well, Yeah. I think, you know, on a personal note, this course has saved me in many, many ways. And, yeah. Anyway, going back to my presentation. So, if you're teaching poetry or creative writing, I think the first thing that you have to think and consider is, you know, what kinds of poetry will you include in the course syllabus? And I think as a teacher, you know, we have to ask yourself, what makes poetry poetry? You know, and because that's something that we will be teaching our students. You know, what kind of poetry will they be learning? It will depend on the kind of poetry that we'll be sharing with them. So is it, you know, the rhythm and rhyme that matters when we teach poetry, or the count, you know, if we're a traditionalist, and sometimes, you know, the feelings that one shares using words and phrases that make people happy, sad, or whatever feeling is that, you know, being brought about by the poetry. Yeah, so, you know, personally, I think reading and understanding poetry can lift one's spirit. But as we all know, as we teach, you know, ESL or ESL, when something is lost in translation, appreciation fizzles out, and students cannot understand a single word that you're saying or a single word that they're reading. So writing poetry can be difficult for ESL or ESL students. Imagine writing limericks without humor, you know, or present them something that's funny, and you see yourself smiling or laughing, but your students just stare at you and say, "What the hell are you talking about?" You know, or something like that. But something, you know, it happened to me, and so I know that, you know, writing poetry can be very difficult for ESL students. But when it's done well, you know, it opens a different window. You know, I think poetry can do it to you. It opens a window into one's soul, and regardless of ethnic or cultural background, you see the person behind the word. And I think that's what the beauty of poetry is about. So this presentation is about poetic discourse and you know, the kind of power it has to change lives. I will be sharing with you some of the poems that my students have written. And in doing that, I'll be sharing with you some of the poems that I've written in the classroom while my students were also writing. So, you know, I was writing with them. And I think there will be one project wherein, or two projects wherein, I made use of, you know, mobile technology, where, you know, the students used, you know, their smartphones, mobile phones. And they were literally mobile because they had to, you know, go out of the classroom, take a couple of pictures, come back, upload them on their blog, etc., and then write a poem about what they've taken. So yeah, so that's some of the things that I'll be sharing with you today. Now, going back to the definition of poetry, I believe that if, as you can see on the slide here, and I'll just read it to you, a great poem can move you, shake you, and remind you what it is to be human. I think this is what good poetry should be about. My students have taken this class, have taken introduction to literature and poetry when they were in their second year, and last year they were graduating, so they were already, like, you know, in their fourth year. So at the beginning of the semester, they were actually a little bit, you know, unsure of what we're going to be doing. They asked me, you know, what are we going to do in this classroom, because they've taken poetry before, and I said, well, we will be reading, you know, poetry, but 80% would be on, you know, you'll be on writing, and they will be writing their own poetry. And in the beginning, they said that they were scared because they don't know how to write poetry, or you know, it's a little bit difficult for them. And I told them, well, you know, we're just going to take it one step at a time and use the examples that I will be giving them. And at the end of the course, you know, they were able to show and exhibit and present, you know, because we had this like an oral presentation at the end of the course, and you know, they were reading their poetry. It was the transformation, which was just great. It was, yeah, it was impressive, I think. Anyway, going back to this slide. So a poetry can be a written and oral expression of self. And this is what I said to you a while ago, that it opens the window to one soul, regardless of ethnic background. And it has the power to change life, I think, and that's what poetry is. So the literary, because the one I'm sharing with you is based on a paper that I submitted in the Shanghai conference. So I had to submit, you know, literature review methodology to this part of the slide. So that paper talked about you know, poetic discourse and critical. I forgot what it's called now. Critical literacy theory. Anyway, so poetic discourse, you know, many of you, I think, know, comes from the Latin word discursus, and it actually literally means running to and fro. And it does make sense because the act of discourse is often associated with listening, talk, conversation, or even a narration of a specific topic. Let's just stop there. I'm going to read what Teresa wrote on the chat for this. She's asking if I've written poetry for some time. Yes. Yes, I have. But I stopped, you see. I stopped writing poetry. And I was able to get back, I think, 3-4 years ago. And it was the time when I was trying to finish my PhD dissertation. And so I thought that, you know, really poetry saved my life, because I was at the time at the brink of my sanity, you know, trying to finish my dissertation, a lot of things going on in my personal life. There was really no outlet. And so I thought, you know, I would give myself time off writing my thesis. And I did. I went to Brighton. I was in the UK at the time. Now, this is something personal, and this is being recorded. But anyway, yes, and I stopped writing my thesis for a month. I didn't look at it, and I just, you know, took a month off. I went to Brighton, and that's where I started writing poetry, in Brighton. And in a month's time, I was able to write a lot. Anyway, going back to this presentation about the poetic discourse, yeah. So where was I? Poetic discourse, yes. I think, you know, through the years, many poets have used their poetic works to express their feelings and describe, you know, their interpretation of what they see around them. It's always a reflection of what is real or a figment of their imagination. And in doing so, you know, poetry has greatly influenced the construction of our society, our culture, and even identity. So, yeah, so poetic discourse here, you know, addresses the various issues of cultural life. And And in doing so, we use a lot of creative modes in writing, you know, such as the use of rhythm, rhyme, style, etc. And that's just, you know, when you write. But it doesn't mean that when you read poetry, you don't engage in poetic discourse. Even when you just simply read, you are still engaged in poetic discourse, because that's when you examine, you know, what poets reveal in the poem, in their poems. You try to understand the context in which the poem was written. Many of the poems that we've read, you know, when we were in grade school, high school, you know, while we were studying, they transmit a lot of sociocultural underpinnings, you know. And that's why I like, you know, teaching poetry creative writing, because we can talk about a lot of topics such as, you know, racism, gender issues, political ideology. And it can be very interesting and at the same time personal. Now, the personal, quote unquote, it can be difficult for students because, you know, they may not be as open to sharing what they really think or what they really feel, just you know, for fear of embarrassment, humiliation. And so what I did in my class is I told everybody, because it was a small class, yeah, I only had like, I think, 17 or 18 students. I told them that we're going to treat this class not as a course, but as a workshop. And it's going to be a workshop where, you know, with a small group of people where we share, you know, all the poems that, you know, we'll be writing. That I think that was what I told them. And that anything that is said in the classroom will stay in the classroom. Nothing goes out. So we had that pact at the beginning of the semester, and I think that also helped in shaping you know, the good relationship that we've had, that I've had, and, you know, my students had with each other in that course. So I think having that kind of agreement from the onset is a very good idea, because, you know, poems are actually sometimes just written for themselves, and to be shared with everybody can be, you know, can be daunting sometimes. So, going back to the literature review here and the theoretical framework of writing this paper. Well, I use critical theory, and it is, you know, the theory of literary criticism used in analyzing and understanding literature. And I think that, you know, when we are engaged with critical literary analysis or what have you, there is always a constant negotiation of meaning. You know, we analyze what the poet was trying to say with his or her work. You know, through the represented text, that's when we kind of try to understand the context. You know, why did he or she write something like that? Why did he say that? And so that in itself is a discourse, a conversation. Discourse analysis of poetic text is something that I use as a teaching methodology in this particular course, you know, because it stimulated discussions and reflections, and you know, trying to establish ideas and facts sometimes, especially, you know, with the history of the poem. We'll try to understand the perceived meaning and understanding of the text and, you know, the intertextual relationships. So there is a social construction of meaning in the text, and the authors or the writers are always seen as cultural channels, because you know, we try to understand, as readers, you know, we try to understand our own representations of reality. And this construction of meaning can be used in poetic writing. And so my students, of course, in my class, they were encouraged to write their own poem. And in doing so, it has to be guided, and it was guided. This guided writing is very important and necessary. So I used a lot of sample poems to give them the basic scaffolding in developing the poetic skills and, you know, building their confidence in poetic writing. So the methodology used in writing this paper. Well, a little bit, David, you know, you asked about Vygotsky. Yes. Yeah, there's a little bit of scaffolding there, because, you know, especially for helping students how to write, you know, you've got to give them the tools they need to be able to do that. So yeah, so scaffolding was very important, and it is very important in creative writing. All right, so I will now go on to the methodology. Discussing the methodology part of this paper. I'll be discussing, let me see, the class context and the projects that I did, and the projects that I shared in this paper, and the qualitative analysis that I used in understanding and analyzing the text based on my students' work. So here's the class context. Like what I said earlier, it's a very small class. We have 17 students. It's an elective course, which is really, really nice because then I don't like courses that are required courses, because, you know, even students, because when, sometimes, you know, when students don't like to take the course and they don't have a choice, it's going to be miserable, you know. I mean, they will be miserable in my class. I will be miserable in my class. Whereas if it's elective, I always tell them, you know, you only take my class because you're interested in it. So for elective courses, I think there are only two reasons why students take them. One, they need the number of credits. Or two, they're really interested in the course. So I always think of the second reason, you know, that they are interested in my course and they want to be in my class. I think that's a positive way of looking at it. So this creative writing course is an introduction to the basics of writing poetry. And, you know, we try to generate creative ideas in the production of their poetic work, and poetic work, I mean reading and writing poems. All right, so these are the poetic genres that we covered in the course. So creative prompts are, you know, based on thematic issues, if you can see here on the slide. And so, you know, readings and discussions of sample poems serve as a learning model so that students to think, read, and write poetically. We also covered, you know, technical aspects of poetry. So they learn, you know, structures, lines, stanzas, rhythm, meaning, and form. They have to. But I did not focus too much on either the traditional form of poetry, because they have taken something like that in their second year. So I want it to be easy. I want it to be modern. So I want to focus on modern poetry, not the classical poetry where students find extremely difficult to grasp the ideas presented in classical poetry. So at the end of the course, you know, the students had written at least 10, I think, or even more, 10 or more poems, and they produced them, we shared them in class, and in public delivery as well. We had this, you know, the last presentation when we had to do it in public. And so their poems are all in written. They are available in written, audio, and video format. And they're all available on the blog, so it's out there. You can Google and you can find them online. All right, so the pedagogical, I think. So the pedagogical practice that I used in this course, it's all past. It is task-based oriented, and with this, you know, pedagogical approach, I begin my class with a discussion of what they're going to be learning, and I always make it a point to read the language objectives, the objectives will guide them in writing their poems. And we will be doing also literary critical analysis based on the example poems that I have prepared. And, you know, we look at the poem, the situation, context in which the poem was written, and a few minutes on gathering, you know, the response. So this is what I call the reader response, wherein I focus on the student's reaction or response to the text. And then I move on to discourse analysis of the you know, cultural and social education of the text, you know, poems, and finally, you know, the oral and written workshop. So in the last activity, students practice reading aloud their, you know, the sample poems, and then they take turns until they get the rhythm of the poem. That's for the reading part, you know, the oral delivery. And once they, you know, once they get the idea of a particular genre that we're learning, for example, on a particular day, then when I feel like, you know, they're ready to get on to writing the poems, that's when they do it. And so in some cases, you know, writing the poems can either be done in class or as a take-home assignment. So writing poems in class can be fun. But, you know, if you're going to do it, make sure that, you know, it's something that is a little bit easy. It can be very difficult. So short poems, maybe like a stanza or two stanzas type of poem, you know, the length, which is about two stanzas, that would be good enough. And with the pedagogical practice, I also make sure that you know, the students are given the necessary scaffolding to help them write their poems. Yeah, I just want to make sure that, you know, they have the tools that they need, you know, to help them to write their poems. Otherwise, you know, I won't be confident myself. You know, it's like throwing something at them and not knowing whether they're going to be able to do it or pull it off. You know, yeah. Anyway, moving on. So this particular class, it's quite easy really to blend technology because we were in a computer lab. And you know, at the beginning of the semester, I already created a class wiki where, you know, the lessons and the resources for each activity were posted online. And each student has a computer, and, you know, with internet access. So sharing and archiving students' poems were necessary. They were necessary in this course. And, you know, sharing, archiving, it was pretty easy because of the, you know, the digital, or the internet access that we've had. And the students also, you know, have their individual blogs. And that's where I also post my comments on the blog. So I made use of, I will be sharing that with you, you know, how I integrated mobile technology in my classroom. This is one example of a project or a lesson that I did with them. I taught them something about Freeverse. It's really quite interesting. It's one of my favorite, one of my favorite lessons that I did with them. And I was happy to know that it was also my students' favorite, one of their favorites as well. So Freeverse. Has anyone of you, has anyone of you, have you tried writing Freeverse before? Anyone?
Yes. I think so.
Yeah. All right. Good. Yes. Theresa said something like, you know, she liked the Robert Frost thing. Yes, because Robert Frost once said that writing Freeverse is like playing tennis without a net. And you know, for some people, they think that writing Freeverse is a crime against poetry. Because, you know, for some traditionalists, they think that writing Freeverse, there's no organization. It is shapeless. But some people disagree. You know, they think that when you write Freeverse, it does not necessarily mean the very 100% liberation from rhyme. You know, you gotta have a little bit of rhyme, a little bit of rhythm, and you can stick to some conventional forms. The difference is, with Freeverse, it gives, you know, the writers, the poets, a great deal of freedom. And this creative freedom is quite empowering because, you know, it gives the poets or the writers, you know, different language styles to mix and match, as long as, you know, they help them describe their emotions, you know, their observations and whatever they want the readers to experience. And they can use rhyme, they can use alliteration, rhythm to achieve whatever desired poetic effect they have, they want. So it is not totally free in every sense of the word. So the learning objectives for this Freeverse is, Theresa wrote on the text chat, if I were to write poetry, I'd write Freeverse. Me too. Alright, so let me just read to you the learning objectives for this lesson. Well, of course, you know, the first one is, you know, for the students to understand what Freeverse is and how it's written. And in doing so, because of the examples that you have to learn before, you know, before the students had a go in writing, they had to put the critical theory into practice, you know, and they have to use metaphors, alliteration, simile, and personification into their writing as well. And they had to learn how to convey meaning and most importantly, emotions to the text that they're using. And of course, you know, critical analysis is part of the activity. And you know, this lesson just provides students the you know, environment so that they could learn how to write new forms of poetic expression. So with the language objectives, they had, like what I said earlier, they had to use metaphors, alliteration, personification in their compositions. And instead of showing, you know, they instead of telling, they had to show. So they had to make use of a lot of descriptive words. So examples were given to them so they know where they are and what the difference is. So the pre-task discussion, so this is just an example of a pre-task discussion. And if you're going to do this, just, you know, spend 10 minutes or so, 15 minutes maybe, in doing this pre-task discussion, where you look at examples of very short poems. And, you know, focusing on descriptive words such as, you know, the ones that I highlighted here, gushing sounds, blended voice, and the use of adjectives. And I also shared with them a sample of a poem that I wrote. I did this because I wanted to, you know, show my students that, you know, I am writing my own poems as well, and I'm learning as I go. So it's not, you know, the expert. I don't want to present myself as someone who's an expert in the field, but, you know, like them, I am learning as I go, you know, taking it one day at a time. And the idea also is to show, you know, the personal and you know, vulnerable side of myself, and that I have done what I'm asking them to do. But I'm not suggesting everyone should do this, you know. If you're not comfortable with sharing your own poetry with your students, then I guess, you know, it's all up to the teacher, but for me, I'm okay with it. So this is the an example of a poem that I wrote and I shared with them. Wherein I made a parallel comparison with, you know, bridges, bridges and how, you know, it can be used in building relationships and sometimes ending relationships as well. So I will just read this this poem that I shared with my students. It's called Bridges. As you can see, I wrote this back in 2011, August. I was writing the final version of my dissertation at the time. And I think I must have finished my oral defense. I can't remember now, but yeah, it was the most difficult time of my life in 2011. So, Bridges. I don't know, Vance. Maybe I should put it under Creative Commons copyright.
Copyright law in the United States says that anybody who creates anything is the copyright holder. Everything has a copyright. So, but okay. Creative Commons allows you to share your work, say, to anybody who doesn't, you know, who attributes a source. I usually have them share alike as well.
I haven't shared this with anybody, aside from my students and aside from, you know, a very close few friends. This is
like
the first time I am sharing this in public.
Wonderful.
And so I'm glad that, you know, familiar faces, you know, Claire, David, and Teresa, and you are the ones I'm sharing this with. Anyway, so let me just read it.
Wonderful. Great. We'll have a recording of you reading it. Wonderful.
All right. Bridges. Short bridges, long bridges. No matter how we look at them, they do what they do best. Bridge connection. From one place to another, bridges break boundaries that separate us so we could build relationships that unite us. Like all other things, bridges go through the test of time, withstanding the fierce force of nature, extreme heat, cold heat. In time, they get brittle, weakening foundation if left to rot, bridges collapse. End of connection. Yeah. There we go. So, why I wrote this poem, I was having personal difficulty with my life at that time, but I'm glad it's over. And I think at the time I decided to burn bridges with other folks. Now, moving on. Moving on with the in-class task that I asked my students to do. I asked them to use their smartphone or digital camera, whatever they have, and spend 10 minutes outside the classroom. So I actually literally asked them to get the hell out of the classroom. And I told them to take a picture of anything that grabs them. It could be anything. It could be a mailbox. It could be a litter box. It could be anything. And I told them that once they're done, they need to come back to the classroom and upload them onto the blog or their computer, and then just start looking at the pictures that they've taken and try to describe in words or phrases, you know, that they could associate with the images, you know, with the images they've taken. And I told them, you know, to make sure to connect with their own feelings and asking them questions like, you know, what do you feel? How do you feel? How does this image make you feel? Can you describe the image? You know, describe your feelings. Are there any similarities to that? So I told them to start, you know, constructing 1 to 3 verse poems, which is about 3 stanzas. And I asked them, you know, to make use of online dictionary just in case, you know, they get lost or if they could not find the words that they need at the time. And once they're done, I asked them to upload their poems onto the blog. So this is an example of a poem written by my student, who I think is one of my Facebook friends. She's Indonesian, and I like what she wrote. If you could just look at this, she chose a water dispenser. And so let me just read this. The water dispenser. Whenever he heard the bell, whenever he heard the bell ring, everybody would run to him. Lining up, he would take as much as he wants, and he would give as much as he can. When the bell rings for the second time, silent. Everybody just goes back to their routine, leaving him behind. You all can hear him. Get some rest before the next bell rings. He stands still, takes the charge. Oh, snap. Something goes wrong. When the cold water is too warm and the hot water is not hot at all, red flash starts to blink. Everybody finds him now, looking for another one. And I thought, you know, after reading this poem, it was so nice. It's very simple. It's really very simple, but, you know, the way she, you know, did the, you know, a comparison, this parallel comparison, just great. So she made use of, you know, personification, where a water dispenser is treated as a male because she, you know, she used the word, the pronoun him, who has the ability to give whenever needed. And as suggested in the first verse, you know, whenever you hear the bell rings, everybody would run to me. So this writer, this writer's description of her own observations during class breaks where students would flock to this water dispenser and line up to fill their water bottles. And, you know, the honesty and reality in the text, for example, we would take as much as you want and you would give as much as you can, makes us reflect on how much this habit of filling and refilling is something that we do not give too much thought. The text, you know, helps student readers to step back and realize that, yes, you know, this water dispenser has been giving us so much, and yet we take its existence for granted. And it is another human emotion shown in this poem, and that's the feeling of abandonment, you know. The feeling of being needed and the happiness people experience in giving. Yet there's also the feeling of sadness and disappointment when we are, you know, human beings at our lowest point. This writer, this student, also made use of repetition, alliteration, et cetera, such as, you know, the hum, 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 repetition, which describe the sounds that it makes. So I think it was a very good job. Another example is this one. Alive. When you look far and stand tall, you don't forget to look down. When you smile, once you are bold, you are not afraid to fall. You become wiser as the green leaves and buds grow. There's always another autumn. The strong wind gives your branches a wither. But the winters make it clear. Then here comes the spring, and you're ready to be reborn. Things keep changing as if it will never come to a halt. You know, you won't be here as your power struck in September. You won't be even. I've been too cold. You've late. You turn sport, the experience moves, the water fills the tail. There's a thing you believe from a long time ago. You'll be a soul of the tree when you become an adult. So, with this particular poem, Alive, the students also made use of personification, where, you know, an old and grand tree symbolizes the epitome of a man who has triumphantly survived life's trials and tribulations. In the beginning of the poem, the phrase, when you look far and stand tall, you can forget to look down. It suggests that despite of one's personal accomplishments, looking back to one's roots, you know, past or beginnings, it is necessary in one's life journey to appreciate the good and the bad, because, you know, these are the things that make a man, make a human. In the second verse, the author made use of seasons to convey the idea of change. And I like that one as well. You know, this change one goes through as time unravels. You know, in the lines, there's always another autumn, the strong winds give the branches a little. This illustrates the literal impression of falling leaves during autumn. And, you know, the seasons, for example, in the spring suggests being reborn, and all of this impart the notion of a never-ending change. As we all are, you know, we are constantly changing. So I like this one as well. Now, after, you know, my students have, remember I asked my students to leave the classroom for like 10, 15 minutes or so to take a picture. I was left alone in that darn classroom all by myself. And I used that time to write a poem. It was just there, you know. I thought, oh, you know, a barren classroom. The first, you know, few words that came to mind. I said, okay, what the heck? Might as well write something about it. And so I did. And so I wrote this, like, you know, 15, 20 minutes while my students were out. And so I called it, and I shared this with them after, you know, all the students have shared their own poems. So I told them, you know what, guys, while you were out, I wrote a poem as well, and I shared this with them. And so I'm going to share it with you. It's called In a Barren Room. Everybody's done now. The deafening noise, the fear, the scream, and the moment of the door is now a place where the deafening sound is silent. What's a classroom without students? What is the point of teaching when you've got no one to teach? I miss the busy and blaring scream of the shrieking voice of my students, the look on their faces that show exactly what they're feeling, the unspoken words that express a feeling in their hearts. this classroom is never the same without my students. We never, ever be the same. Their presence gives life to this place. Their very existence is the reason for mine. And then the classroom is now a flaw. Unproductive days in my head. Without my dearly beloved students, this is just an empty space, a barren room. With only the cold walls to speak to. Yeah, so there you go. That's another piece of my thing that I share with my students. And I think the last, there were many other projects I did, but I think the last one I'm going to share with you is this cultural identity project. Because I've talked about, you know, how we can use poems or poetry to look at the cultural context, the cultural context in which the poem was written, or, you know, why a writer wrote something or, you know, talking about his or her, you know, particular ethnic background or cultural background. This is a good opportunity for, you know, students to learn other cultures and, or, you know, look at their own, especially the ESL or ESL students. So here you go, we've got the learning objectives, you know, boosting their self-esteem, understanding, you know, ourselves and other cultures. So the language objectives in this particular project, they have to write the 5 W's in poetry. So, for example, who is speaking the poem, what the subject, when did it happen, where did this particular poem, where did this take place, you know, why did, you know, a certain situation event happen, etc. So again, there was a replay of elements that the students had to use. So for example, rhythm, metaphor, imagery, narrative, etc., autobiography, whatever is applicable. Anyway, I'm just going to share with you 2 poems, but I think I'm going to read this one, Dad, Why Can't We Keep a Dog? And there is, because, you know, they were, with this student, she's an Indonesian student. I think in this particular class, I've had, I think, 4 or 5 students from Indonesia, and the rest of them are Thailand. So one student wrote about this. Dad, why can't we keep a dog? And there's a translation here, or explanation of the bottom. For some ethnic groups or tribes in Indonesia, like the Batak from northern Sumatra and Manado from northern Kalimantan in Indonesia, do actually eat dogs. So this is something I was quite surprised because I didn't know. So it was a learning opportunity for me. Dad, why can't we keep a dog? I've been begging my parents for a puppy, and they always said, we'll see. For what seemed like an eternity, we lived in a diverse society, you see. Half of our neighbors dislike doggies, but touching them can be counted as a sin. Moreover, across our home is their space of worship, making the puppy stop barking 5 times a day, if not easy. The other half loved doggy too much until they wanted to be served in this dinner paper. If one day a puppy ran away for just several hours, don't you mind knowing it might end up in our neighbor's bowl? Now I've stopped begging for a puppy because knowing the possibilities makes me uneasy. If having no doggy can make everybody happy, then no dog it is because we live in a neighbor's society. So it's a little bit sad, you know, but yeah. It is, you know, a different culture, and something that I learned, I didn't know before about people living in Indonesia, particularly in the Northern Ireland. So, what are the? I think I'm just in my last few slides now. are the pedagogical implications of this course? I think these two poems would summarize what they've learned. At the beginning, here on the left-hand side, this is a poem that my student wrote at the beginning of the semester when I asked them to just write whatever, you know, they were feeling towards the course. This was at the beginning of the semester, you know, I told them, so what are your fears, you know, before engaging to writing difficult poetry. So Jovian, he's also from Indonesia, this is what he wrote at the beginning of the semester. At the tip of the pen, it's amazing to think and knowing what you can find by serving something. It's like exploring a gold mine. At times it went smooth, just like rowing. Well, other times it would take a while. Likewise, it could end up in your crying. In a good day, it will bring forth a smile. Some say it takes creativity, others say it takes some risk. I'll say the essence is honesty and courage to start from zero. At the tip of the pen, it's seasonal. You might find yourself trapped in a harsh winter. Be true to your heart and be delusional. Inevitably, voila, a bright summer. So the positive or hope that he'd be able to write poetry, but he admits that it could be, you know, sometimes, you know, there will be occasions when he won't be able to write anything, but it is sometimes, you know, it depends on the mood. Now, this is what I like. This is the last poem that he wrote in this course, and I think it encapsulates everything that he's learned. This is the last stanza. Night has come to an end, a journey of the ink and the pen, a search for love, life, and humor. Make your day brighter, or maybe even gloomer. Can I say that I've done my best? Should I lay my guilty rest? For I fear that I'll forget. And when once forgotten, you can say once dead. If I can make a wish that it's December, I wish to always remember to keep this journey close to my heart. And from there, never to depart. The show might not be an extravaganza, nor an epic tale of any kind, but mind you, this might be my last answer, and it won't be my last line. So, yeah, there you go. I think the pedagogical implications of this course would be how I think it would be, you know, with the poems that my students were able to produce in 18 weeks, and in many of them, they have shown personal growth. They have shown, you know, their own culture, their own identity. They have shown their linguistic skills. They have shown, you know, constructive learning. And all that, I think that this course has been a very good one, not just for my students, but for myself, because you know, poetry has always been so dear to me, but doing this with my students allowed me to also look into my own personal growth. So there you go. And I think I concluded this paper by saying something about, you know, students. The students are budding writers, and you know, they make mistakes. And when they do, I correct them, of course, because I'm a language teacher. But I always make sure that, you know, I am, and I, at the time, I was very careful with the words that I choose. And I always make it a point, you know, to remember that, you know, the kind of feedback must be always constructive. I have to be very sensitive to the kind of feedback that I give. Because like what I wrote here on this slide, poetry is a work of art, so treat it like art. So the last two slides that I have here are some, I think, a few letters that I received from two students who were in that class. And I received them, I think, 2-3 months after the class ended, after the course ended. And let me just say here, I want you to know my gratitude for you and your lectures have given me that I share the capacity to choose this poetry course and choose an elective course to self because this course reminded me of my freshman course. Oh, okay, freshman, not this. The required literature course, which after said that course, after the literature course, we were kind of afraid of writing poems. So that was, I think, very traumatic. But he said, your poetry class is so different, no specific strict rules. We can use our own imagination experience to create our own poem. And that's why I started to open my mind to poetry. Inspiration enables me to write good poems. That poems in return give me inspiration and thoughts for my life. So writing poems gives me a chance to reflect on myself. At the end of the course, I seem to know myself better. He didn't teach us techniques, but I found out that emotions are our best techniques. So thank you for giving me this opportunity to allow me to change my impressions and poetry. So there you go. And this one, I think she's the one who wrote Alai Biola. And she said, well, she admitted that she skipped my classes a lot of the time. But then she said, what I like about this is that she's still writing poetry even up to me. So there it goes. Thank you so much for listening to me share my poetry class. So thank you. Do you have any questions or comments? Okay, I'm gonna give Vance the mic.
I'll wait and see if anybody else wants to make a comment.
Hello there. Can you all hear me? Teresa here.
Yeah, we can hear you, Teresa.
Okay.
Great. Nice to see you.
Okay. Thanks, Vance, same here. And Aidan, I really liked your session and just loved the poems. And I would like to ask if I can get in touch with you privately to see if you'll allow me to refer to your Bridges poem, because to be able to insert it maybe in a project I'm finishing, which is an e-dictionary that I hope to publish at least in PDF. And it's all about bridging. It's about bridging the L1 and the L2. And it's something I started back in 2003. And I think it would just be great to have that poem, okay, as an idea in the introduction of what people are going to see in that dictionary. Okay, so I'll get in touch, and congrats, love the session. Okay, bye-bye. I'm going to have a late lunch now. Bye, all.
Bye-bye. That's more authentic feedback, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Teresa. Of course you can use that poem, you know. How can I say no? Your dear friend. Yeah. Thank you.
I have a question. I'm quite inspired now to have my students write poetry, but I don't think they can do it. Their vocabulary, I don't even know how many words they might know. They're sort of, I don't span 5, maybe. Obviously your students have a very, they have a command of alternative words. Is that something that you are able to teach them in the course, or is that just something they bring to the class with them? Did my question come through?
Sorry, I didn't take the mic. I was already answering your question. And I was the only one who could do it. Some of my students who came, who were in this class, have a very good command of the English language, but for I had to select their draft, basically from practical knowledge. Yeah. So I hope, that answers your question. But it's just you and me now, so I don't mind if I wrap this session.
So it is.
Yes.
I kind of feel like we're in a presentation where it's kind of like this. We're in a barren room. Where did all the audience go?
Well, they said we had to go, so yeah. Then, well, I think some of them, stayed at the very end. So yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're still recording.
I was thinking, earlier, maybe we should have done this presentation an hour earlier instead of 2 p.m.
Yeah. Well, David, lives on the east coast of the United States, so it must be about 9 o'clock for him. So if you do it earlier, it's 8 o'clock, so.
Yeah, it'll be difficult.
Some people will
say anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you for the invite.
Yeah. Yes, no, that was awesome. Just a charming presentation. I really appreciate it. And it's so nice of you to share. And that's how learning together works. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Aiden. Aiden Ye from Taiwan. And is it Kaohsiung? Or is that where you are, Kaohsiung?
Kaohsiung. Yes.
Oh, by the way, do you know Daylene? She's also in Kaohsiung.
Yes, she was there. Yeah.
And do you know her?
She was in the presentation. I've met her probably after the recording. Yes, I've met her. Yeah.
She wants to collaborate with my students because we both teach in aviation colleges.
Yes.
So anyway, we're
after
pursuing
the recording.
That.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I'll put it on the recording. I don't mind. But anyway, well, I'm going to say good night because I'm going to go have my dinner. It's for you bedtime, I think.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for staying up so late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.